Now that fascinates you. We now move to come to a conclusion to this first part a little bit. With a lovely, I like him the more I see about him, but he hasn't got a good press. A man called Nestorius, who in the year 428, that is the year that De Trinitate was sneaked out and published in the West, Augustine's De Trinitate, and the year that Theodore of Mopsuestia, his teacher, died, so he picked a bad year, he became bishop of Constantinople. And remember, Constantinople is still a very young diocese. It was only started in 338, so it's not even 100 years old as an imperial thing. Now, that was what Nestorius' job was. He had a few disadvantages. First, he was a monk from Antioch who was appointed to the see of Constantinople. Remind you of your history just briefly, of your geography rather. Constantinople, you know, Byzantium, just on the straits there, coming from the Black Sea into the Mediterranean. I'm sure you're familiar enough with that, with all Nicaea, Chalcedon, all just close around. Over here, you've got Antioch, Syria, and way down here, you've got Alexandria, okay, in the north of Egypt. Constantinople was a constant rivalry between the Antioch church and the Alexandrian church to control, because it's the emperor is there. They want to get the ear of the emperor. Not only his ear, but everything else if they can possibly get it. So there's a lot of rivalry. It's not just a Melbourne-Sydney effort. It's a big rivalry thing. It's Greek and Turkey. It's that kind of rivalry to control the see of Constantinople. Well, on this particular occasion, and it went back and forward between who was having the power, who could control, and that's a power game. Don't be too embarrassed about it. It still goes on. This had happened once before in the year 403. You may have heard of John Chrysostom. Chrysostom, the golden mouth. He was apparently a beautiful preacher, he's a saint. He spent his time, he died in Siberia, the equivalent of Siberia, because he was kicked out of the sea by Alexandrian rivalry. He couldn't cope with it. He was a saintly man who preached in all this heavy politics. He broke down and just had to get out of his sea and died up in Anatolia somewhere in some salt mine or something. Like, it's really a very sad story of all this inter-rivalry. How a saint survives as a bishop, God knows. Thank God there are plenty of them. Well, here's a second one arrives, and you can imagine, who is going to find something wrong with his teaching? You're all allowed to guess. I wonder if it would be the Bishop of Alexandria. Wouldn't that be interesting? Let's have a look. His teacher was Theodore, and Nestorius was very determined to uphold the true humanity of Jesus. That much is certain. However, in doing it, his language was his thoughts. He didn't have it too clear yet. They're still trying to find words and find insight. And so it wasn't difficult to accuse him, as they accused Theodore, of talking about, by accenting the reality of the humanity, some of his expressions made it look as though he was talking about two different beings, a divine being and a human being, somehow united. Now, what he did, when he came there, he found in Constantinople, due a lot to Ephesus. Ephesus was the great temple of Ashtarte, was it, the great goddess. So they had a wonderful devotion to Mary there, but you've got to watch it. Was it to Mary or Astarte, or, you know, it all gets a bit confused. So, but anyhow, it was a great devotion to Mary, and there were monks there talking about Mary being the Mother of God. And we got familiar with that, but just get Mary the Mother of God. He said, no, that's confusing things, he said. Mary was the Mother of Christ, Christotokos, not Theotokos, because she isn't the Mother of God, you know, bringing God into existence. You could see his problem. But rather, better use the word Christ, because she's the mother of the humanity, not of the divinity. Now, he thought he was spot on right. And he certainly thought this was a terrible business, getting the humanity and divinity all confused, and plenty of it done it before him. So he appealed to Pope Celestine and said, look what's going on in my diocese. And at this stage, it's very interesting to see how papal presence is a very strong thing in the East at this time. So he appealed to the Pope as an arbiter. That was quite fine. The problem was that this poor Nestorius got caught up in a problem that had already been solved in the West. Can you see the problem? I put it clearly enough. This confusion of divinity and humanity. In fact, It's called, technically, in theology, this problem of the divine and the human and the one person. Let me give you the word, if you like. It's called communicatio idiomatum, the communication of statements made about Christ. When you talk about his divinity and talk about his humanity, what are you doing? And the solution is simple, really, once you look at it. But don't blame Nestorius for not getting it right. The Word is Jesus Christ, the Son, the person. Now, there's one person we're talking about, and that person is fully divine and fully human, such that whatever is said of the Son of God in his divinity is said of the person. Likewise, whatever is said of the Son of God in his humanity is said of the person. Okay? So Mary, of course, Mary is not the one who begets the divinity. Of course, obvious. Let's leave it said. But she is the one who conceives and nurtures and gives birth to the humanity of a person who is divine. The one, what she conceives is a human nature, a human, an individual of the human species. But in this particular mysterious case, the person there is God. So you can rightly say she's the mother of someone who is God, not the mother of his divinity. So mother of God, now, I don't think I need go into all this, but Augustine had, in fact, already gone through that whole logic, and there was a man in the Western Church called Leporius who had the same kind of problem, and Augustine found that solution, spread it out very simply, and everyone seemed to be at peace with it. Now, the problem was, when going back to our Nestorius, when he called in 428, Augustine's only 2 years off his death, when he went to the Pope Celestine, he didn't call on Augustine for help, but he grabbed another man called Cassian, C-A-S-S-I-A-N, who seemed, let me judge him for the moment, who seemed keener to get a verdict than to solve the ambiguities, and who came out against Nestorius without, you see a lot of this in this time of history, without attempting to understand what people are saying. People come out and just, you know, he's wrong. And so Celestine, recognizing the error in Nestorius's way of putting it, and there was an error there, got someone, and this seems an awfully stupid thing to do, if I may excuse myself for saying it, he got Cyril of Alexandria to go up and sort it out. Cyril, in fact, asked, could he go up? Cyril of Alexandria was out to get Nestorius anyhow. Cyril is a saint too. So the saints of this age are fascinating people, and they're probably just like the saints of our age, you know. I bet there's plenty of wife in heaven thinking, how on earth did they canonise him, you know, or similarly the other way around, because we're human beings, you know. But these have peculiar faults that belong to a tough age. They're hard men, but they must have been saints with all that, eh? But they certainly weren't pious people. You wouldn't put their statues in the church or encourage your sons or daughters to follow them. Cyril, okay. Cyril comes up. He insisted, going back to Cyril of Alexandria, and remember his line, remember the, you know, Athanasius and the whole Alexandrian movement. He insisted on the union of two distinct natures in one hypostasis, one subsistent being. Fine. In Christ's human nature, there is a rational soul. Well, that had been said at Constantinople, so he'd got that far and held to that very firmly. Thirdly, the human nature has the ground of its existence or being in the divine word. Christ, therefore, now here's a key point, has one divine physis, monophysite. Heard the word? One physis. That's his big theological statement. And by physis, he meant one centre of energy, one centre of activity, one, almost what we might mean by subject, but he's using the word physis for it. And one hypostasis, a real existent substance or being. I hope you can already see how Theodore Mopsuesti would have had problems with that, because he's talking about two natures, He's using the word physis for a way of being. The other man's using physis, and this is, I just want to alert you to this because it goes on again still today. We've got to be careful how we use it. He's using physis for energizing center of activity. So they're just using the words differently.